From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll have an extended interview with Joyce Summers, who is retiring after 33 years as the director of the Indianapolis Arts Center.
Then I'll chat with the Indiana History Center's Susan Sutton about the Bass Photo Indianapolis collection. And of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All this and more right after the latest news from NPR.
After 33 years as the Indianapolis Arts Center's first and only executive director, Joyce Summers is retiring at the end of June. During those 33 years, Joyce has led many changes at the Arts Center, including the building of their Michael Graves Design Facility in Broad Ripple. Travis DiNicola spoke with Joyce about some of the milestones that have made up her very creative tenure.
Joyce, welcome to Art of the Matter. It's great having you in our studio today.
I love being here, Travis.
Well, thank you. And let me start off our interview by just first saying congratulations on an incredible career and all the wonderful work that you have done over the past 33 years at the Indianapolis Arts Center. You've had such a great influence on the arts in the city. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. I think that I've been around you a big part of that time, so you can see how joyful that made my life.
You know, and that's always the thing. I always can see you're just having a great time doing what you get to do, and whether it's out at Broad Ripple Art Fair or during the different events or the gallery openings. You know, a lot of people you know, don't realize that the Arts Center has been around as long as it has. I mean, some people still call it the Art League, I know. But it was, I mean, really, before the Michael Graves building, before all the other stuff, it was just sort of a, what, some shacks on the river? I mean, or is that, that's maybe a bit of an exaggeration. But
well, it started, ironically, as a WPA project for those mostly young, a lot younger than me people. That was the Work Progress Administration under Roosevelt during the Great Depression. So I always find it so interesting that people had to make art, you know, during the Depression.
Yeah.
And here we are 75 years later. The Art Center turns 75 this year, and WPA is 75 years old. So it's easy to track ourselves as we go through. But it, there is that innate necessity for humans to express themselves through art in some way, you know. And I think literature was always a thing that I enjoyed, but then I was, like, opened up to, just by chance, to art in the 70s.
You actually started as a student at the Art Center, correct?
Right,
you took
yeah.
a class there?
Mm-hmm.
What was the class you took?
Well, it was just, like, still life, you know, and I actually had an artist friend, Marilyn Price. She's used to me blaming this on her. So in the 70s, she basically always say drugged me kicking and screaming down in my first class because she was helping me do something for one of my kids in school. And I went, no, I can't make art. And the only reason I bring this up is that I think so many people don't know what's inside of them. And I went to that first class, and slowly I just had this whole life open up to me. I had four young kids, and I was doing it basically for myself. And then when they asked me to come on the board, I kind of said, you know, push back a little bit because I said, no, I don't have time and I'm not a joiner. And but serendipity has followed me and the Art Center all these years. Of the timing was perfect. I wasn't brilliant. I wasn't prepared to take on being the head of the Art Center. I was quite naive.
Now, you were working with UNICEF at the time, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you were doing that, and so you certainly had, before you joined the board, I mean, had, other than the class, really didn't have a lot of involvement necessarily with the arts, or?
No, I didn't. I mean, until I took, you know, that class, because I remember, you know, when I was in the third grade that Mrs. Worth said, bad. You know, she actually didn't say I was bad at art, but that's the way I interpreted it.
She didn't say you were good.
No, she didn't say I was good. I didn't do that grid right. So, and then Mrs. Walker in the eighth grade, I always say those watercolors were, and I, as I thought back about it, I thought, I don't think they really ever said that I failed, but I was watching my friends who were artists, and I thought they were miracle people that could make all this. And so this is my plea of people. And I've always been a slow bloomer, and so I just think no matter what age you are, you should dip into it.
And that's one of the great things that the Art Center offers, of course, is that, I mean, you have so many different classes there for all ages and for all abilities. Whether you're someone who, you know, has been working in the arts all your life and are looking to learn a different style, or maybe, you know, switch from, for example, working with stone to working with metal, or people who... You know, don't know what they've never done anything at all, and just want an introduction to drawing or painting or sculpture.
That's right.
Or glass blowing.
Yeah, I think especially, you know, but now they're calling it, and I'm starting to experience this at my age, is creative, you know, aging. And so I don't know that that means you make your body creative, but I mean you do things that are more creative, and you want to stay involved and keep stretching and keep your curiosity going for a long life. Mm-hmm. And we could get that in reading, which I do, by the way, Travis, but also I expect to go back to making more art. And it was just very fulfilling. And I think, like you said, I see a lot of retirement people mm-hmm. in classes, and also 3-year-olds. So we have all the way. And also we see professionals in each other's class, for just as you mentioned, like from ceramics, say, to glass, mm-hmm. and they seem to go together a lot of times. So all the way from afraid to walk in the door, which we see, mm-hmm. this mysterious art, and we try to demystify that through, as you know, Arts Park, which has a gorgeous 12 acres around the Art Center.
Yes.
In Broad Ripple, and has 27 sculptures that some are permanent, but many change. So people are not intimidated by parks, you know, so mm-hmm. it kind of connects the two, because people, nobody's watching them look at a piece of art, and they aren't afraid to talk about the art with their friends, and this is what we're trying to encourage. And, of course, we're right off the Monon mm-hmm. and the White River. That is the serendipity I'm talking about. Because when we located in Broad Ripple in 76, I had just become the president, non-paying, and they hadn't even done the rails, you know, to trails yet, and little did we know. And then slowly we kept purchasing property as it came available, and then we were on the river.
Well, I want to stop you for a moment, because mm-hmm. I mean, because the Art Center has grown so much, and you know, of course, I mean, you're talking about the Arts Park and the mm-hmm. great building off the Monon. But at the time that you were on the board, before you became the executive director back in 76, just if you can, because I moved here to Indianapolis in 1996, which was the same year that your current building opened.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember what it was like before that. Try to give me an idea of what it was like when you first came on to the Art Center back in the early 70s. What was the facility like?
Well, I always think of myself of having my antenna out. But I know that it was a time from me graduating from high school and college of what we call, excuse the expression, white flight from the middle of the city. And the city was becoming a donut downtown. And it was pretty depressing downtown. So I think that, but art went on, and our classes just kept burgeoning. I mean, I think there is a sign of human ingenuity.
What was the building like? I mean,
oh, well, we were down at 31st and Pennsylvania
yeah.
in a piece of property that fourth generation Faisenfeld back. It was Maggie Faisenfeld, and she donated that first piece of property at 31st in Pennsylvania. They built kind of a block two-studio building.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I took a lot of classes and met a lot of wonderful people. And I still have those friends from way back. We're still together. And then just at that time, we were talking about we were out of space even down there. And mm-hmm. There was a move to move out of that, what would be called urban setting. And I kind of fought it because I was also a civil rights worker.
Mm-hmm.
I turned out for the first time and only time in my life to be wrong about that. We needed to move to Brotherville.
The only time you were wrong.
The only time I've been wrong. And so there was a serendipity. We moved to Brotherville, and we just immediately doubled in enrollment, mm-hmm. and we kept doing that year after year. I think we started with 20 classes, then we had 40 classes, and we had 60, and then today we have 300 classes a term.
Wow.
And we always have an average of 1,200 people a term in class. So, and it wasn't our aim, Travis, but we now know we are the largest art center that's not connected to a university
mm-hmm.
or a museum in the United States. And that wasn't our goal. Ours was just answering the demand of the community. What do you want? And it's thrilling to think about what they wanted was more art and mm-hmm. more studios.
And sort of kept on growing. And as you said,
growing.
Picked up other pieces of property and now been able to expand quite a lot.
Yeah, we went location. From then 10,000 square foot in our first building. We call it now the Art Shack, which had five studios and mm-hmm. a gallery. And then we were just out of space with the popularity. We had lean-tos and trailers. I mean, we looked not exactly attractive in Broad Ripple. And so it was easy to make the case that we needed to expand the zeitgeist that happened was a coming together of Michael Graves as the architect to design. I'd gone to high school with Michael at Broad Ripple High School, and I didn't know him that well, but we made that connection.
Travis DiNicola with Joyce Summers, who is retiring after 33 years as the director of the Indianapolis Art Center. We'll be back with the second half of this interview in just a minute. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter. We now return to Travis DiNicola's interview with Joyce Summers, who is retiring after 33 years as the director of the Indianapolis Art Center.
Joyce, of all the things that you've done at the Art Center, is that what you're most proud of? I mean, building that building and having that open, the Michael Graves building in 96. I mean, it seems like looking back on it, the core of everything that's the culmination of everything from before, and then it's sort of been the core that everything else has been built around since.
It has, although it's gone on forever. I mean, they've had like outreach when it was all volunteer, and I was the first paid person in 76, 8,000, just for anybody wants to know, 8,000 a year. But because of that, I felt driven to do the best I could because I only worked with volunteers. You know that story. But I think when I've been asked this question a couple times or many times, and I have to think because there's so many highlights. One I'm most proud of out of three or four things would be our outreach program, which is huge. And I codified that in 1989. '99, and actually hired a director in '94 who really helped us flesh it out. So now we have 7 outreach programs, and from the blind school to homelessness project to free classes in the community. Mm-hmm. We've been doing that since 1989. And we work with Big Brothers and Big Sisters and all the things that you know about, Travis. That's been one of the most wonderful things that I've seen, because we service about 5,000 youth, inner city usually, or disabled, a year. And we have to raise quite a bit of money to do that. Yeah. And I and the board and Dave Thomas have stayed totally committed to that, even in bad times. And I think the other is really just what you mentioned was building that building, which yeah. is inspiring place. And I've just been asked to write an essay on inspiring places. And I went, and it's supposed to be a story, not philosophical. And that's
spirit
me,
in place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that feels right for me to tell that story about Arts Park and about the building, because that architecture absolutely can change a whole sense. Mm-hmm. From that, you know, we had international notice and national down to Broderpole. And I think it just opened up everything. We're able, you know, to have all those classes. And the spirit of the place is you just walk in, as you know, and you could just feel the energy. I think I love the Broderpole Art Fair. It was going on just before I came mm-hmm. on as a student.
It just had its 39th year.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been to every single one of those, mm-hmm. even before I was the director. And Marge Beal, who was the founder. And so I think that is, and the other would be my staff and my board. And I know this sounds like what you're always supposed to say, but I tell you, I have this such a totally dedicated staff.
Well, you mentioned that, you know, when you started, I mean, you were the only paid staff.
Right,
now you have,
right.
what, 30 full-time staff and
mm-hmm.
plus all the
150 contracted
instructors.
Artists.
Wow.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, and we are, you know, it's hokey, but we're a family. And mm-hmm. As you know, the cutbacks that have had to happen recently, we've had to do that. And that's when you realize you're a family, because it's not like you're fired. mm-hmm. You know, we don't have that mentality, and not-for-profits don't have yeah. that mentality. They care about each other.
Well, it certainly, even in spite of the current economic situation, I mean, the Arts Center just seems to be, you know, continuing to grow and to meet, you know, more needs, serve more people. I was reading that the number of students that you're reaching today, 4,500 students.
Yeah.
That's just
now, that's
fantastic.
Just in, yeah,
that's not even with your outreach programs.
No, and that's, yeah, those are just classes, and actually we had 311,000 attendance last year, so I always use that 11, so mm-hmm. you don't think I'm just saying 300,000. But that's the actual data, and that's amazing, because we have a modest budget. And mm-hmm. I think, like you, arts groups, not-for-profits are very inventive and creative, because they care so darn much about what they're doing. You know, they're driven to get it done.
So 33 years now. I mean, when you, Joyce, became the director of the Arts Center after being on the board for a while, at that point, can you remember if you imagined that, oh, I'll do this for a couple years, or, did you think at that point, this is what I'm going to do until I retire?
You just quoted what I said. I'm going to do this for, because I wrote the job description for this, and I took the grant in my jeans, you know, to the Arts Commission, and I wanted to just sort of sneak in, drop it, and leave. And somebody said, no, you need to come in and talk. She wants the new director, Janet. Wanted to talk to me, and I went, no, I don't want to talk, you know, and but they sort of insisted, so I did. And she said, are you thinking about it? And I said, no, you know, and she said, why? And I said, because I don't qualify. I wrote the job description, and I don't have that academic background at all. And so I think just me being a generalist, slowly, and the little wonderful things that were happening again, I have to say, synergistically, but I think the synergism, as they say, you are prepared, so when the opportunity comes. And like you, I have a civic bent. I like to go to all the planning meetings that are
sure.
going on, and then you see the opportunities, and they're appropriate. You don't have to force or force opportunities. You know, if you are out there, you don't want to serve a need that you aren't best at serving. So we always looked at what was going on internationally, nationally, locally, and what were the implications to the art center.
Yeah. Now, during that, quite a lot of that time, you had a great partner on your staff. I mean, you've had many great staff, but I do think it's worth singling out Dave Thomas for the work that he's done with you over the years.
It's just, you know, not, I hope I don't get emotional about this. I've done this twice now whenever I talk about him, but I have like six staff that have been there at least, or two over 12 and five over 18. And that continuity absolutely has made it happen. David and I just had the same. He was so in love with the outreach idea that he will help carry that on. And he's like, just he embodies what you would want a partner to be. We actually, maybe he's gotten mad at me, but he's never told me. But we've never ever had in all those 20 years. We just have not had any kind of falling out or misunderstanding. And neither one of us are shy. We're just able to talk and respect each other. So, yeah, what a wonder he is. So he will now be the great continuity along with Pam Rosenberg, who, of course, is the director of operations, who's been there 18 years. And she will help do that bridge for me with our new person coming on, who is Carter Wolf,
which is very exciting. That's Carter, of course, someone who's been very involved in the community. His work as the director of the Horizon House, and now coming up to the Arts Center.
Well, exactly. So the first time I sat down with him, I guess see that he had the same core values. So we could talk about the aesthetic knowledge or criteria that needs to be with this job, but the thing that's hard to learn is you have to be authentic when it comes to really caring about the community. So it was a given with him working at Horizon House, caring about what was going on in our city and the homelessness that was going on. And I think the magic of the Art Center is the instrument of art, you know, as the agent of change for positive change. And he gets that.
Yep.
And that immediately. I think I was a little worried about the connection to the next person.
Sure, how could you not be? I mean, you're
but then, and I was like, I realized subconsciously I was a little tense about that, and I wasn't in on the process till the very end. Well, I have no fears now. I feel actually we're excited to work with one another.
That's good to hear. But but of course, I mean, this is, you know, this has been such an enormous part of your life, and you know, to hand it off, and I'm sure, you know, that there's a lot of joy, but there's also, I'm sure, some questions, as you know, as part of that. Now, one thing I'm sure it will make it a little bit easier. You've got your retirement roast that a lot of great supporters and friends of yours are having.
We'll see how great they are when I start roasting me.
And then what do you have? I have such a hard time imagining you in retirement, Joyce. Do you have some plans?
Yeah. Well, I mean, mostly I'm going to, I think wisdom would be that I just sort of just sit there and kind of enjoy the space. But actually, there are many things. Like I said, I'm just so curious about life. And there's so many things that I'm just a dilettante in so many ways, in so many areas, even.
Well, you know, there's a great art center up the street you can take a class at.
I am going to go back. Life drawing is my favorite, and that's one thing I ask when I come back and, you know, take open figure. And, yeah, so I get to do that. I will continue as director emeritus. And I promise not to come to the first two board meetings, so Carter won't have to look at me in the back going, what in the heck are you doing that for? And then, actually, I won't go into it, but I have to have a knee replacement. And then, well enough to get to Italy for a month in September and October, where I just want to read and read and read. And then I think I'm going to test are things like auditing physics classes or anthropology, or don't ask me. And I'm totally less than a dilettante in those areas, but I love to read Einstein, and I like to try and read Stephen Hawking, and I'm just interested in why humans act the way they do. Or so I'm going to see if I could do some of that just to keep my little synapses snapping. And
well, that sounds great. Let me ask you as we wrap this up. I know there are many, many memories that that you have of your years at the Art Center. Any one you'd like to share with us today? Something unique, something fun that happened, something...
Oh, gosh. Well,
I mean, whatever, top of mind.
Well,
and I know you were getting asked that question a lot lately.
Well, yeah, but I don't think I've answered it. It's so hard. I mean, like, I do, like, look, I was trying to write my last newsletter, and I went, I can't do it. I don't even know how to encapsulate it. But I think just, I think the challenges, I think the most important thing, oh my gosh, the friends I've met, my board members that have stuck there and really made it go over the top. I mean, just to remind you, we had that, I guess, one big landmark would be, and money shouldn't be it, but it made it possible, was the feasibility study for a new building, and it said you couldn't raise more than $2 million. Well, you know, we just said, yeah, we could do more than that. I know that feasibility. So we went out and raised $8.5 million. So I think people should just, if they really believe in things, I mean, you know, that just the doors will open for you, as Joseph Campbell says, for... that maybe wouldn't open for anybody else. So people should trust their own intuition. And they, of course, if it had to be informed before they get there. But I think just that creative process is a thing I don't think I would have ever realized that I'd be part of. And so it's been, I'm worried about, you know, not being in contact with my old friends. So sure. I just have to work at that. And some of the marvelous, marvelous chairs of boards I've had that have just driven the place and made it possible. And then I think they've gone out, at least three, like Stan Hurt and Frank Basile, and have, like, they got introduced to art and philanthropy at the Art Center, and now, as you know, they're
and
all over.
All over, yeah.
Yeah, not, I think they would have done it eventually, and not because of me, but... but we had a cause that was that was, you know, became dear to their heart.
Yeah, both board members that you introduced to the arts, who have now worked with so many other great organizations, also staff members. That you mentored, who are now at other organizations
That's
all around
right.
the city.
Yeah, Pam Hankel. She's brilliant.
Well, Joyce, congratulations.
Well, thank you, Travis.
Yeah, it's, you know, I always enjoy chatting with you very much, and so this has been a real pleasure.
Well, you know how chatty I am.
and of course, we'll see you next year at the next Broad Ripple Art Fair. You'll come back for that?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah,
sure.
Absolutely, for the 40th.
Yeah.
Got to be there for that.
Yeah, we need to do that.
So, well, congratulations, and I hope you certainly enjoy your very well-earned retirement.
Thank you very much.
Travis DiNicola with the Indianapolis Arts Center's director, Joyce Summers. She's retiring at the end of this month. We at the Art of the Matter congratulate Joyce on her 33 years of leadership in the arts in our community. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Do you know what holiday we're celebrating this weekend?
Flag Day?
Flag Day.
Well, yeah,
are you flying your flag?
I am flying my flag proudly, yes.
All right. We might have some patriotic things or some all-American things on today's calendar that we call. What do we do?
What do you got, Sharon?
Let's see. Do I have anything that involves some grilling out? Actually, here's something that's not to celebrate Flag Day, but something fun that's coming up next Saturday, June 20th. Old Town Carmel will race into summer with the second annual Artomobilia. Artomobilia. Mm. It's a celebration of the art and design of the automobile. And from noon to 6 on Saturday the 20th, several city blocks will be closed to accommodate a special outdoor expo of automotive history, where the district's many eclectic local galleries, restaurants, and design houses will join with collector car owners to present a display of automotive design on wheels and on canvas. So how cool is that? If you're a car buff, go out there. If you're an art buff, go out there. And if you haven't had a chance to kind of take in the district lately, you need to see what's going on in Carmel. So Artomobilia on Saturday, June 20th, from 5, all day, actually.
All day.
Noon to 6.
Hey, there's a lot of free concerts going on this weekend. Saturday at the Harrison Center down 16th and Delaware from 11 a.m. until 10 p.m. It's the Independent Music and Art Festival. Features about 20 different bands that are going to be playing live, as well as some very cool shows, including the Indiana Handicraft Summer Exchange. Also, up at Broad Ripple Park on Saturday, it's the Teen Arts and Music Festival 2009. 12 teen bands, all made up of teens, are going to be playing in the Teen Art Zone and the open acoustic stage and different places. This is sponsored by RSC Music, and it's free and open to the public. And this is going on until 7 p.m. on Saturday, 11 till 7 p.m. at Broad Ripple Park. There's also going to be some visual art shown as well. Very cool stuff. A lot of free concerts all day Saturday.
And those kids might aspire to grow up to be the band Possum.
They'd be playing in Possum.
Which is a cool rock band that will be featured at the Rathskeller on Saturday night, June 13th. And you can take that in and maybe have a cold beer and a nice German meal as well.
Hey, another concert going on Saturday, June 13th at 8 p.m. at the Randsburg Auditorium down at University of Indianapolis is Sounds of Pride. On the air with the Indianapolis Men's Chorus, they are celebrating their 20th anniversary year, and this is sort of a walk down memory lane with a whole bunch of sentimental favorites from 1940s radio programs, and it's bringing together the Indianapolis Men's Chorus as well as the Indianapolis Women's Chorus and the Pride of Indie Jazz Band. Again, that is all taking place down at Randsburg Auditorium, University of Indianapolis, 8 p.m. Saturday night.
Very good. The play Bent, the Martin Sherman play, is being staged by the Theater Within, which is at the Church Within, which is at 1125 Spruce Street. It's just four blocks east of Fountain Square. And Bent tells the story of a gay man living in Berlin during the Nazi regime, who goes through an identity and a spiritual crisis and has to figure out what he needs to do in order to survive this horrific period. The play is called Bent, and there are performances at 8 o'clock on Friday and Saturday night through June 20th.
Hey, if you're still looking for some really cool camps for your kids, you may be able to still get them involved with Historic Landmarks Foundation of Indiana is having a couple camps, including the ARCA Camp, which is a camp based on architecture, of course, and then there's also one, a Civil War campfire dinner, and which sounds like a lot of fun to me, and these are all coming up very soon, so you definitely need to check out historiclandmarks.org to find out if they've still got room and see which camps you want to send your kids to.
Excellent. Hey, a lot of people this summer are doing those one-tank trips and getting to know our own state a little bit better, and I have some ideas for you if you're thinking about heading south to Spencer County. You can visit the Living Historical Farm at the Lincoln Boyhood National Memorial. You can rent a canoe on Lake Lincoln inside Lincoln State Park. There's a little bit of a theme here, isn't there? You can feed the buffalo at Buffalo Run Farm. Tour the Santa Claus Museum. Yes, it's hot. It's summer. But don't forget Holiday World and Splash and Safari. Still is a family-owned theme park, voted one of the best in the country. And especially if you have younger children, this is something you definitely want to check out. You can even go online to LincolnPennyPincher.com, which is a website with all sorts of cool deals and printable coupons for Spencer County. So check that out. Left out one of the most glorious things you can do in Spencer County. See the historic architecture of St. Meinrad. If you've never been to St. Meinrad, you need to get yourself there. Beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Nice. Hey, if you like organ music, then on Sunday, June 21st at 2:30 p.m., you want to head out to the Warren Performing Arts Center for the Central Indiana Chapter of the American Theater Organ Society presents Celebrating Indiana Composers with Ken Double and the Grand Barton Theater Pipe Organ, along with the Indianapolis Jazz Orchestra. Pretty cool. So combining jazz with organ music, and they're going to be looking at some great, Indiana music, such as Night and Day and It's All Right With Me, Begin to Begin, a lot of Cole Porter and Hoagy Carmichael. It just sounds like a really nice concert. Again, that's at the Warren Performing Arts Center, Sunday, June 21st at 2:30.
Sign me up. That sounds fabulous.
Yeah.
You might still be able to score a last-minute ticket for the final performances this weekend. of Grey Gardens the Musical, presented by Buck Creek Players. And it's remember, it's the story of some very colorful members of the Kennedy family. Grey Gardens the Musical on stage for one final weekend at Buck Creek Players.
And the last thing I have is Brouhaha, or just Brouhaha, which is the Phoenix
Theater. That is very scary.
Thank you. It's their 14th annual Microbrew Festival. It's taking place on Saturday, June 27th from 3 to 7 p.m. It is open to individuals age 21 and older, and you get to sample all sorts of the region's finest microbrews and craft beers and some great music all afternoon long, and great food, and all the proceeds from Brouhaha support the educational programs of the Phoenix Theater. It takes place in the 700 block of North Park Avenue between Mass Avenue and East St. Clair Street, so down in the Chad March area right next to the Phoenix Theater. It is rain or shine. It will be a lot of fun and definitely worth checking out. Food and drink, phoenixtheater.org.
Well, I think we had some All-American things on our calendar today to celebrate Flag Day weekend.
There we go. And we'll be back with more things that are All-American as well. Who knows? Next weekend on
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Susan Sutton loves historic photographs of Indianapolis, and she recently spent a good deal of her life engaged in a task any history lover would envy, sorting through thousands of pictures to create the book Indianapolis, the Bass Photo Company Collection. Sharon Gamble invited Susan to tell us about the book, the people behind the Bass Photo Company, and about what makes a photo of historic value.
Okay, so photography is everywhere today, and you know there are TV commercials about people who never print their photos. They just get stuck in the camera, and nobody ever does anything because they take so many pictures, they're overwhelmed. Remind us when photography really became practical in our society, not just experimental, but it actually kind of hit mass market.
I'd say really it hit mass market with the invention of the Kodak Brownie camera. And so we start seeing a lot of family collections exploding in the late 1880s and 90s and then moving forward with the Brownie. So really we're looking at basically the turn of the last century as a great starting point for family photography. Mm-hmm. Of course, photography itself was first developed in 1839 in France. So when the Brownie camera started coming out, photography still wasn't very old.
Mm-hmm. And I love this book. Not only are the pictures really cool, but they give you so much context for things that have changed about our city as well as things that have remained constant. I did not know until reading this book that Indianapolis had been a prime place for furniture manufacturing and sales, and that was part of what caused what became the Bass Photo Company to exist. It is surprising that there are so many industries that come and go. And likewise, I think there are probably a lot of people who don't realize how many car manufacturing companies there were in Indianapolis. But, of course, Indiana was just a vast hardwood forest for many years, and so it was a perfect place to have furniture manufacturing.
Mm-hmm. And what was the role of photography in the sales of that furniture?
Well, that's a great question because people really don't think about it too much, but it used to be that a representative of the company, a salesman, would have to travel from town to town to sell his wares to local businessmen. And for many years, they would travel with small sample cases, and they would be full of miniature versions of a furniture line. And, of course, that's difficult to carry. It's difficult to pack and repack. So they came up with the idea of maybe taking a few small samples and a catalog of photographs. So you could show by example the quality of the merchandise, but then you could show the different styles you offered and all the different dining suits and bedroom suits and so forth.
So smart. And Mr. Bass, tell us about him. He didn't really start out to have anything to do with photography, right?
No, he actually started off as a miller, which is really interesting. We talked today about people having so many different jobs in their lifetimes. He was a miller. He was a school teacher. And then he developed an interest in photography. And when the James Bain Company decided to sell the satellite operation here in Indianapolis, he went in with one of the Bain photographers, Mr. Woodworth, and bought into the business. And within a short time, he retired from teaching to develop, to develop
yeah, a photography business.
I really didn't intend a pun, but to develop the business, to devote himself to the business.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting there, and he and his wife had no children, so I think that may be one reason why he was interested in helping young people, both in school and then later in his business. He really was a mentor.
He took on some apprentices and showed them the ropes and
definitely
passed his his wealth of knowledge and literal some of his literal fortune along.
Absolutely. Yeah. C.C. Branson is a fabulous example there. He hung around the business because he was interested in photography, and finally Mr. Bass gave him a job, just sweeping floors and being a delivery boy. But he moved up to, you know, where he was finally in charge of the company.
You know, one of the things that fascinates me about this company is that it never had to lay anybody off during the Great Depression. Now, you might think of more core businesses that people absolutely cannot survive without the goods and services of those businesses as the ones that can survive a tough economy. Photography, in a lot of people's minds, would be kind of a luxury, and yet, because of the niches they'd carved, I take it, is why they were able to stay afloat during the Depression.
That's true. They really were commercial photographers. They didn't specialize in portraiture, which can be considered a luxury. They were essential to businesses, and they made sure that the businesses in the area knew that the Bass photos were essential. Mm-hmm. And they developed great economic practices in the business. For instance, for many years, the principals in the company would just defer taking payment. And so it would roll into this tremendous credit that they were owed by the company.
Hmm.
Well, in the mid-20s, they decided that probably wasn't a good idea. So they always paid themselves when they could afford to. When they couldn't, they paid the employees and passed a credit to themselves for the future. So though some of their employees got fewer hours of work, they never laid anyone off. And in fact, if they didn't have a specific order, they would send a photographer out just to document something in the city, just to give that person work.
You know, the collection itself that was passed along to the Historical Society is how many photos? It's astonishing.
It really is huge. About 20,000 prints and about 150,000 negatives.
Oh, my. What a treasure trove. And there are a couple of hundred photos in this book. I cannot even begin to imagine the process of winnowing those down.
It was extremely difficult.
How long was that process?
I would say it probably took me a year and a half to really narrow things down and to write the text as well.
Yeah.
But choosing among so many that I consider almost to be friends, it's very difficult. And, of course, when you leave one out of the book, you know that there are people who really would have enjoyed seeing it who will miss it. But we do have them on our website.
Right.
So people can go to the website and look at these photographs.
We talked a little bit before I turned the microphones on about how some of these photos, and these may have been examples of photographers just going out without a specific assignment to document, but there are photos that simply document the intersection of certain streets. And I say simply, but there are quotation marks around that, because if I were to go out, or we were to go out after we have our conversation today and just start taking pictures of the intersection of, say, Washington and Meridian Street, people might look at us like, why are you doing that? Who cares? But the fact that somebody did that in 1901, in 1897, in 1907, so that you can see the fashions, the interurban, the horse-drawn carriages, the early automobiles, is amazing, as well as some buildings that have survived.
True. And in many of these cases, yes, they were commissioned to photograph a building, either when it was first constructed or when there was an alteration or ownership changed. But you mentioned a specific intersection. Illinois and Washington is the most photographed intersection in this collection. The photographers often used the interurban to go to and from their assignments. And they would get off the interurban there on Market Street at the interurban station. And then they would walk south and head east to go back to Bass Photo on New Jersey Street.
Uh-huh.
And they stopped at Illinois and Washington, which was the most bustling intersection in the city. And if they had leftover negatives, they'd been told to photograph something interesting on the way back. So that's what they did, and it's just fabulous because you can see the Bates Hotel, you can see the Roosevelt Building, you can see people passing in the streets before there were streetlights, and people walked willy-nilly across the street mm-hmm. whenever they felt like
yeah.
it and wherever they felt like it. So it really does give us a different perspective on society as well as the physical environment.
Do we know, and I'm going somewhere with this, do we know, were there any female photographers that early working for Bass Photo? Do we know that?
I'm afraid I don't know.
Yeah. Probably not.
I would guess that probably not photographers. However, they did have women doing the retouching and the hand coloring. And so these women did work on site there mm-hmm. at Bass Photo. And so there was a lot of respect for the artistic talents of these women. I don't know of any who were actually behind the camera lens, though.
It may be in part because though the equipment, I mean, it's not like the little contemporary today digital pocket-sized camera. You're hauling a lot of stuff. But sure. But what made me ask the question, one of my favorite photos in the book is of, it's at Washington and Illinois, and it is a very elegant little structure that's labeled the Public Comfort Station. And this one is for women. I assume there's a counterpart for men, maybe catty-cornered. It's a public restroom.
It's a public restroom,
yeah.
Yes. It is an interesting structure. And, you know, one neat thing about these images is that not only do they connect us to what something looked like or that something existed, like that comfort station, but it also gives us an opportunity to hear people's stories. And I remember showing that in a program one time, and a woman burst out laughing. And she said, oh, I remember that.
Ah.
She remembered as a young child, her mother would take her, along with her sister, downtown to go shopping, and she and her sister longed to go into that that public comfort station. And her mother was just horrified at the idea. She was sure it was filthy, and she always said,
no, we will wait until we get to Ayers. So people have so many wonderful stories, and these images illustrate how the city is a part of millions of lives.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And it's great to look at the photographs and know that there are thousands of stories that go with each photograph.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, obviously we can't talk about all of them, but I love the categories, photographs of Monument Circle in its many incarnations, especially the northwest quadrant where the English Hotel and Opera House was, and then that very 60s modern JCPenney. And, of course, those are long gone, long gone.
Right. The JCPenney building got a new facade in the 80s, and it definitely looks different. It's much more attractive.
Yes. Everything's relative, right?
That's true.
And there are just some quirky photos, too, like this enormous, it's a Santa Claus made of white, some sort of white foam material, and it was a part of an advertising show, right? And it's in Union Station, in the main terminal.
It was a Styrofoam Santa. In 1949, Styrofoam was a fairly new product. And it was an advertisement for Styrofoam. And of course...
And it had to have been built inside, because there's no way to get it in.
It was built inside of blocks of Styrofoam. It was wired for sound, so it played Christmas carols. I think it's fantastic. And, of course, in the photograph, you can see people passing by and people stopping to look and to listen and read the advertising that went with it.
Sure. There are so many pictures we cannot do justice, but I want you to, we talked a little bit again before I turned on the microphones about why it's important to take pictures of things that we might consider not so important, maybe even transient, or maybe pictures of things that maybe we think nobody will care about in 50 or 100 years except for our grandchildren. But there is a bigger role.
Well, there certainly is a fabulous reason for people to take those photographs, because we are all part of history. And I think a lot of times we don't think of the fact that it's not just the politicians who make history. It's not just the generals in armies who make history.
Sharon Gamble with the Indiana Historical Society's Coordinator of Visual Reference Services, Susan Sutton. Her book is called Indianapolis, the Bass Photo Company Collection.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com. Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4 p.m. I'll have a special extended interview with Greg Charleston, president of the Arts Council of Indianapolis, a position he's leaving this summer after years of leadership. I'll also take a look at the new George Rickey Public Art Project with Mindy Taylor Ross.
And, of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What Do We Do?
So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter is made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by grants from the Arts Council of Indianapolis and from the City of Indianapolis, and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.